So I'm Commander Josh Bregal, U.S. Navy Fellow at the Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security here at the Atlantic Council, and host of today's conversation, Operationalizing Cyber Strategies. With me today, I'm lucky enough to have Rear Admiral Bill Lehr, United States Navy retired, who is the Director of Defense Cyber Warfare Programs at Raytheon. And also with us, we have Jay Healy, Senior Research Scholar at the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia University, and is also a Senior Non-Resident Fellow here at the Atlantic Council. We're on the backside of what was a really great conversation about operationalizing cyber strategies during an event at the Atlantic Council. And we're going to continue the discussion for about 30 more minutes. And I think the best place to start is kind of breaking it down from each of your perspective. Maybe Jay, you can start. Is this the right strategy for right now?
Thank you very much. And to put it in perspective, we've seen the biggest change in strategy in 2018 into 2019 than in 20 years. The last big inflection point like this was 1998, where you had the very first White House strategy called PDD-63. You had the very first Joint Cyber Command, the JTF-CND. You had FBI standing up the National Infrastructure Protection Center, which was the federal government organization that was going to do critical infrastructure and cybersecurity. You had new doctrine that was coming out of the Department of Defense, terms like computer network attack, computer network defense. That was all in that big year of 1998. And so it's taken us 20 years to get back to these new strategies, a new White House strategy, a new DoD strategy, a Cyber Command vision. And a lot of these, the White House strategy looks very similar to the previous strategies. There's actually, you could go through and do a checklist and say, yup, it's got partnerships with private sector. Yup, it's got international. It's got a patch of vulnerabilities. Where the biggest difference is, I think, is in the DoD strategy and the Cyber Command vision that are really talking about how U.S. Cyber Command and the Department of Defense can defend forward, look at persistent engagement to not just be episodically engaging with Russians, Chinese, North Koreans, Iranians, because that doesn't represent how conflict happens in cyberspace often, but to be in this constant contact with them so they can pivot through, they can watch what they're doing, they can intercept and halt if needed. And so it's been this very fascinating look of what's been happening over the last year, year and a half.
Yeah. So I guess to follow on that, is getting the implementation right, is that going to be the sticking point for a successful strategy, or is this just a new way of thinking about how we strategize in cyber?
Well, there's two parts, and that's why I think this is going to be a fascinating talk, because right now I'm an academic. I'm a think tank. I'm thinking through, is this the right strategy? How will we know? What are the unintended consequences of this strategy? In a complex system, it said that you can never do just one thing. And so what are the unintended effects of this going to be? And that's why I'm really glad to be here with the Admiral, because he's so great on these operationalizing and how you make it. Like, is the strategy too much, right? Even if it's an operational imperative to do this, it might be very difficult to get all the pieces in place.
Yeah, I think to look at the DoD strategy in terms of the life of Cyber Command in a way is maybe a good place to start. So we started with a fairly small notion of Cyber Command that we knew was important to the success of our warfighting operations. We wanted to do it fast, so we made it a subunified command under STRATCOM. We dual-hatted it under General Alexander, where it was our intel capacity for cyber was had its own. But in all of that, we did things in a way that was expeditious, not necessarily always thoughtful. And yet, you know, just if I go back to the very beginning, as a co-chair of the group, I had very, very few parameters, but one goal. It will be a dual-headed command. And so when you look at that, it was more about being expeditious. And now I think if you look at the strategy, 9 years later, it is the first tangible sign for me that there really are some individuals who are thinking about the long-term impacts of the cyber force across all of the military and what that's going to mean. And I do think there's a meaningful pairing with the national strategy. Jay, I would agree that there's nothing really new in the national strategy, but I think there's a synergy between the whole thing that gives DOD and DHS in particular this jumping off point to go form a partnership where it's the lines of effort are a lot clearer than they were. Then when you get down to, you know, getting the strategy operationalized, you know, that's really going to take the leadership of the commanders. And then I think what we've seen just in the last couple of weeks with General Nakasone's testimony, I think it was very clear in the five things that he laid out to Congress of what's important and what he's working on. And I think that's the to-do list, so to speak, that and there's some pretty meaty issues on this to-do list. So that will get the force kind of pointed in the right direction. And if there's a thing that's missing, it is that tangible link to the other warfighting combatant commands and how they're going to use cyber in a way that's complementary to the platform-based forces.
And if I can, because this is really interesting, you know, to look at strategy, right? This event today was held by the Scowcroft Center on strategy, right? And so we're really there. And so we at the Atlantic Council and the Scowcroft Center really take the strategy seriously. The starting point that you mentioned, it's going to be dual hat, meaning it's going to be Cyber Command and the head of NSA together is going to be the same boss. That's a key starting point. The starting point of the current strategy is much that this has much in line with warfare in the other domains, and we need to make this normalize it. If the starting point had been different, if the starting point had been most of the action happens in the private sector, and we need a whole of nation or even whole of system approach to this, then you would never dual hat Cyber Command and NSA. You would never say, all right, what can we do to improve the synergies in Fort Meade? So for example, something that the last director did, Admiral Rogers, he took the defensive part of NSA, it was called IAD, the Information Assurance Division, and he largely folded it into the SIGINT groups so that way they could be more effective together. Absolutely makes sense if you're trying to maximize the efficiency of Fort Meade. Same thing with dual hat. You keep it together because you can keep the two of them together, the accesses, the capabilities. It's faster to have one boss in charge. But if you said instead, America needs to do this, all of us together, then you want that to be unclassified as much as possible. So instead of taking IAD and putting part of signals intelligence, you pull it out farther so that it can work with the private sector. Because offense doesn't just inform defense, which is the reason why they want them together. Offense also can compromise and poison defense, as we saw after Snowden. Right, so that starting point of where you enter that strategy, of what you're saying, what is important, what is this like in other areas, can then set you up for 10, 20 years down the road.
I think you saw those, you know, first two steps from General Alexander and Admiral Rogers, you know, based on their backgrounds. And General Alexander, you know, had already had a long tenure of the director of NSA. I think he understood his both his intelligence authorities and the organization that he had to start as that. And my sense is from, you know, really being there and observing for probably about 5 years pretty closely, is he always tended to lean toward the intelligence authorities that he had and not his warfighting authorities. If you look on the other hand with Admiral Rogers and his background, while he was an intelligence officer, cryptologic officer like I was, all of his tours leading up to that and as a flag officer and as a senior captain were with joint warfighting commands. Mm. And I think a lot of the things in that reorganization reflected that experience and how do I build an organization here that's more responsive to an operator rather than more aligned to an intelligence production process. Yeah. Now, I think with this next step, you have, you know, General Nakasone trying to look as far into the future as he can see. And it's difficult to do with cyber. It just changes so fast. But to start to very clearly draw some lines on a map of what the next couple or 3 years of the cyber mission force is going to look like.
Yeah, and looking in that kind of, I would consider the short term, that 3 to 5 years from now, when I think of strategies, what comes to mind are things like the counterinsurgency strategy, or I think of the Cold War strategy of containment, where it took years, if not decades, to look back and say, hey, this was effective, or hey, this wasn't effective. So Jay, from your perspective, are we going to have to wait 10 years now? Are we going to have to wait years and years to realize whether or not we went in the right direction, or we had this kind of maybe figured wrong from the beginning?
It's going to be extremely difficult because there's no vision that's been set at the top that helps us understand if it's success or not. This goes back, right? I mean, President Obama would always say it's a balance. Well, boss, do you want us to prioritize defense and a safe, reliable, secure internet? Or do you want us to prioritize national security and law enforcement in and through cyberspace? There are massive trade-offs between those two. And saying it's a balance just doesn't allow those lower down to know which of those that you want. So it's difficult then to go through. This president has been a little more, and this administration is a little more of saying, you know, they talk much more about striking back at adversaries more than they talk about the security and resilience of the internet. Fewer operational constraints.
Yeah. So I don't think it will take 10 years, Josh. I think the imperative to act that comes from the attempt to influence the 2016 elections is already being realized in this idea of defending Ford. I think other combatant commanders will look at this idea of defending Ford, and Admiral Davidson in Indo-Pac will say, how can I use that to better posture, you know, my AOR? And I think you'll see the same thing in UCOM and CENTCOM. And I say that assuming that this defending Ford operationalized part of the strategy will be successful to do that. But if it's successful, I think then you will very quickly start to see a demand signal that pushes evolution probably faster than we could see otherwise.
Is that success of the strategy or success of the operating concept?
Success of the operating concept.
Yeah, I mean, because the strategy, you know, is the defense strategy is a cause and, you know, boils down to a cause and effect that we need to be more active, to apply friction, to intercept and halt, and that will, over time, wear down the adversaries, will increase their friction, and they will come closer to norms. And that cause and effect, so the operational concept we're going to see, are we going to see a body count, for example, to go to like a Vietnam example? Yeah, we can expect to see, are we winning or losing engagements more frequently? But the actual counting up those engagements and seeing what that's going to do to adversary behavior, they might respond. You know, and General Nakamura says this, it's relatively easy to generate capability in this space. So to argue that our pushing back on them is going to cause them to pull back, well, they might just do what we are in fact doing, going to the paymasters and say, we need looser rules, we need more money. If that happens, then this might go worse, even if we are winning the engagements.
And speaking of adversary behavior, I'm wondering each of your perspectives on the strategies were unclassified, so they're out there in the world, they're hanging on the DOD and the White House website. From your guys' perspective, what message do you think these strategies send to adversaries or would-be adversaries? Because clearly everyone, it's not just Americans who are going to be looking at these strategies. Anybody can go download these and look at them. What do you think, is there a message that comes along with these strategies to would-be adversaries?
I think so. And, you know, I don't know that we, you know, can go all the way back to Keenan and try to draw something that significant as it had an impact on the Cold War here. But I think it is certainly a sea change in thinking about we're going to indict you. There's going to be some public shaming and to, you know what, we're always going to be watching you and we're going to be right there in the same space that you're operating the way that we do with water space and airspace. And I think there are going to be, you know, probably a lot of people watching to understand how that unfolds. You know, one of the things in the panel, you know, cyber having been described as continual hand-to-hand combat, Jay, I think that's a great example that you used. If that's all it ends up being, I think we're going to have a hard time evolving our way through this. If it becomes something that is, I think, perhaps more meaningful at the operational level, and that may be if you just want to take trying to influence our elections, it goes away as a daily news thing. I mean, that would be an operational win. I think we would look at that, and that would, I think, also, you know, logically suggest that there has been a positive effect there. That would be a step forward at the operational level for Cyber Command.
Yeah.
And that would be the same kind of thing. So if you bring that back to, you know, how Indo-PAC may look at the loss of intellectual property and the atrophying of a submarine capability or some other capability that Admiral Davidson, you know, depends on in the Western Pacific, that would be the thing that I think we would look for next. That where's the cyber role in that?
Josh, a lot on the what message are our adversaries going to take from this is what do they read and who do they believe? Because so much of the strategy is really subtle of trying to say, like, look, this destructive and disruptive attacks like NotPetya, WannaCry, going after elections, that's just got to stop. And there's going to be friction. There are going to be costs. And if you pay attention to that part, great. They might say, all right, we're understanding this new kind of American operation. They've said what this is about. And there is a lot to say that they're going to understand what this is about, especially because what persistent engagement is trying to say is that you have these, it's not episodic, you have these routine interactions, these routine tactical engagements over time. And because they're always repeated, that they're going to get the message, especially because we've been relatively public with what it's going to be about. So far, so subtle, so good. That changes if they pay attention to what the White House has been saying, both Vice President Pence and National Security Advisor John Bolton, who have been, we will be absolutely superior in cyberspace as we are in domains. There is punishment coming. And if they pay attention to that, or if we get a commander less subtle than General Nakasone, right? If we get in a cyber Curtis LeMay there, who believes that why are we doing this subtle stuff? We're not there to quietly trace them and watch what they're doing. You go in and you engage them and you stop them. That's the way the vice commander, General Stewart, talks about it. And so if you have that different kind of commander, or if the next commander isn't a cyber commander, doesn't come from a cyber component, but he comes in and he's a naval aviator, he's an army armor officer, he's an Air Force fighter pilot, right? The subtlety of this current strategy is going to go away. And so should they believe what we say now or what they think this is going to go? It also depends, how our adversaries see this, on where they set the left and right boundaries. Cyber Command and DoD have set the boundaries of this. Look, we are talking about this cyber back and forth and using offensive cyber operations. And we are the only ones that are following norms. And that's about what they say. And if you say, well, what about Stuxnet? Well, we're not going to talk about that, and that's not in this trade space. Well, what do you talk about what we learned from the Snowden revelations? Nobody believes that we were within that. You might say, well, spying was okay, but certainly even our closest allies said, we think this is out of the norms that we think are right for this space, and our response was, suck it. And so, but that's not in the space. That's Title 50. That's espionage. That operates differently. And so within this space, it's subtle and it's really nicely crafted. But if our adversaries or even our allies say, well, that's not the space, it's wider than that. And I'm sorry to take it just a bit longer. General Nakasone, in his own comments, he says in his great article, I recommend that the listeners go look at General Nakasone's article and interview in Joint Forces Quarterly, where he notes that adversaries got disruptive against us in 2013 and destructive in 2014. But he doesn't say, well, that was after the Stuxnet revelations, that was after the Snowden revelations, that was after the Arab Spring and Green Revolutions, where dictators were sure that America was pushing our digital power to cause regime change. As a matter of fact, you go back to Clinton's comments in China, and that's exactly what he was saying. China, you're never going to be able to keep out this information. You're going to need to change, or you're going to tumble. So our adversaries know those things, right? That's included in this. And so they are sure, I suspect that they are sure that we are the ones that were punched first. And deterrence and signaling works different if you're sure you're punching back, not punching first.
Yeah. And it's interesting, on the point of signaling too, and specifically on deterrence, both the national cyber strategy, the DoD cyber strategy, and then cyber's called out again in the national security strategy, that hey, U.S., we're going to be in the business of deterrence in cyberspace. We've got to get this right. Very emotional kind of debates that happen on whether or not cyber or whether or not deterrence is applicable in cyberspace, mm-hmm. or the cyberspace is nuanced enough that the traditional theories and deterrence don't apply, and here's why. I'm wondering, from your perspective, the strategies don't lay out here's how you're going to deter, but it does say, hey, we've got to be able to do this. From your perspective, is there a need or is there a space to have a specific cyber deterrence that's public, that could be unclassified, that could be kind of put out there?
I think it is difficult to get to right now with our understanding of operational cyberspace that is still largely always devolves into a technical conversation. And one of the things I was just thinking, you know, as Jay was talking, it's been remarkably refreshing to have a conversation this afternoon when I wasn't talking about firewalls or some other kind of technology, right? So I personally don't know how to approach this question of what's the line that you would cross? Where's the place that I would always push back? What does good cyber deterrence look like? I think my overwhelming sense is it is something that we're going to have to learn our way into. But I don't think we're that far away. And I think the ability of, you know, General Nakasone to kind of pull this forward in terms of the day-to-day operations of Joint Task Force Ares and the National Mission Force, I think is going to emphasize that in a different way. But and again, here's the speed of things. And I'll go back to the, you know, the contrast between, you know, General Alexander, who in my sense was always kind of siding toward, you know, the intelligent side of this, would probably have never used the word like defending forward. I mean, because it is so antithetical to our culture as intelligence collectors that, I'm going to be loud and noisy out there. You know, this has happened pretty fast. It's happened, you know, inside of 2 years, you know, compared to the other 7 years of Cyber Command. So I think now with a cyber mission force in place that there are going to be a lot richer kinds of conversations around these kind of topics that also connect us to the physical forces and give us a very mature way to think about this.
Yeah, and I love those points because I got very frustrated in hearing how bad Chinese commercial espionage was and saying, well, if you're seeing them, why don't you stop them? Well, if we stop them, we can collect on them. Well, you're asking for pretty extraordinary constitutional authority. I mean, for new authorities to do things, but yet you're saying that we have the greatest loss of, you know, the greatest wealth transfer in human history, but you're afraid to do anything about it because you're going to lose collection. It was very, very frustrating. Or you're worried to declassify what you're learning because it's all a wilderness of mirrors. Well, then it's not, obviously not a priority. It's not much priority. To touch on deterrence, especially as in my current academic hat, you know, if you look at a lot of the writing that says, well, deterrence is difficult either in theory or in practice, and three reasons, for example, that come up is saying, well, there's no attribution is hard to do well or quickly. DepSec Defense, Lin, a couple of years ago in a piece in Foreign Affairs said there's no return address like there is with a missile. We're saying, you know, capabilities are hidden, right? How is your adversary going to know what to fear? Because there's no equivalent of Bikini Atoll. And so if the capability is hidden, why would they ever be afraid of it? But if you're going to reveal it, then they can just defend against it. Or third, boy, you need to communicate clearly to to the other person what you want to coerce, like what you want them to stop doing or not do or to stop doing. And in the one successful example of cyber deterrence that we know of, none of those three were particularly true. And the several participants of the Obama White House said that the decision calculus was changed in the 2016 election interference because we were worried what the Russians would do to the electrical grid. That was General Clapper that said that. And Ben Rhodes said we were afraid they were going to do a hard kill on the election systems rather than just this influence stuff. So there, the attribution wasn't an issue. Like we knew. We've been watching the Russians for a decade. We knew what they were up to. The capability we generally knew about. It was Black Energy Havocs kinds of things. Or at a minimum, even if we didn't know specifically what they could do with it, we knew in general, they're Russia, they're going to be pretty good. And they weren't communicating any threat. It was happening entirely within the decision calculus of the decision makers. So you can say out of that, well, if we had an equivalent position in the Russian grid, where I was going to say the Russian electoral system, but what does that matter? I mean, something else that they value, then that would give us this position. And that's more, much more a classic deterrence than what the new elements of the new strategy, which are on this persistent engagement. They're emphasizing that big high end, let's get presence in their system to hold them at a risk as well, but it doesn't feature as much as these others.
So that really is, you know, sparked an idea that I've been trying to work through here, Jay. And if you go back again through this history of Cyber Command and NSA, you know, certainly the things that we were doing in the Navy, it was kind of all in with NSA, but it led you to a very network and server kind of environment, a traditional IT environment, right? So when you all of a sudden have a tangible system, like an electoral system, that's all of a sudden the threat, you know, that perhaps has changed the thinking. And I guess for me, if there is one thing that I've completely changed my thinking during my 5 years in industry, is cyber really isn't about the network. The network's the air that you fly your Tomahawk missile through. Cyber is about every piece of software and every processor on the battlefield. And as you start to change to thinking about holding critical systems at risk, instead of it being really about network security, maybe that changes the deterrent equation a little bit.
And to me, on this long term, you know, what does this strategy mean? This strategy might be absolute right strategy. It might be the way to win. But by winning, what is cyberspace going to look like after we win? Can it survive if all of the main participants are engaged and actively contesting with their adversaries? And I'll push back a touch, because a lot of times, especially in DoD, we think of it as a battlefield. And this is the most transformative technology since Gutenberg. All right, electricity is pretty good. Well, we'll call it, it's one of the top most innovative things that sprung from human minds in 500 years. In our lifetimes, or maybe in the lifetimes of our grandkids, it might even surpass Gutenberg. This literally might be the most incredible invention we have done since fire. And I'm not exaggerating. And so when we pull it down and saying it's a warfighting domain, it's a battlefield, you know, and this is where I wish the national strategy had been stronger, of saying we can never forget how much this underpins our society, our economy, our individuality, our connectivity with other humans on the planet, and we can't lose that transformative power of this. And I'm concerned that we're going to just see the DoD as the main solution. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I couldn't agree more. And you know, I think from my DoD example, you know, it's the same problem inside the DoD. I don't think there's a clear enough recognition from the platform-based forces of how important information age technologies and all of this change, and that is still, you know, still being, you know, uncovered day by day, with machine learning as being maybe the most current iteration of this. But it is back to this thing. It is going to be an environment that, you know, in some ways that we will maybe have the winning idea for democracy, if it really can equal a lot of playing fields in ways that you couldn't do with physical forces. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I agree, you know, we probably are only touching the impact of what this, you know, comes from, whether it's from a societal point of view or from a warfighting point of view in the long run.
Yeah. And cool. I think that's maybe a good place to wrap up, in that the U.S. has the opportunity now in cyberspace to really kind of operate the way we'd like to operate. You know, so there's two of the pillars of the national cyber strategy call out. They want to protect the American way of life and also advance American influence. But this blank slate of getting it right the first time isn't guaranteed, and it's not forever. So I think with the implementation of the strategy, maybe a first step in saying, here's how to do this right. Here's how maybe we can get to advancing American interests. Here's, by the way, we can establish norms as we move out. I want to thank both of you gentlemen for being here to shedding some light and some perspective on two of these kind of tectonic shifts maybe in cyber strategy. So thank you again for listening to this episode of Digital Statecraft. Specifically, we're talking about operationalizing cyber strategies brought to you by Raytheon and the Atlantic Council. Thank you, gentlemen, again for your participation and your insight again. I'm Commander Vergal, your host here today. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please join us again soon. Thanks.